Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And happy Wednesday, everyone. This is the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, as always, we have good news, bad news, crazy news for conservatives. It's our post-State of the Union edition. So the bad martini is actually going to go first. Fear not, there will be a good martini, but there's a sequence to it today that we think is appropriate. So we start with the president's speech, and that's the bad martini. There's a lot of things in there that made you just shake your head, say that's a bad idea. Other moments you felt like Joe Wilson from 2009, that simply wasn't true. But we've selected three clips from the president's speech last night to kind of highlight where he went with all this.
Tonight I'll lay out additional proposals that are fully paid for and fully consistent with the budget framework both parties agreed to just 18 months ago. Let me repeat, nothing I'm proposing tonight should increase our deficit by a single dime. If Congress won't act soon to protect future generations, I will. I will direct my cabinet to come up with executive actions we can take now and in the future to reduce pollution, prepare our communities for the consequences of climate change, and speed the transition to more sustainable sources of energy. Gabby Giffords deserves a vote. The families of Newtown deserve a vote. The families of Aurora deserve a vote. The families of Oak Creek and Tucson and Blacksburg and the countless other communities ripped open by gun violence, they deserve a simple vote.
So some nauseating exploitation there, Jim. Before that, we saw the president vowing blatantly to work around Congress to get whatever he wants done on cap and trade. And, of course, he started off by saying that he's not going to add anything to the deficit. The RNC had a response saying, that's hard to believe from a guy who's added 58 trillion dimes to the deficit.
Once you produce the trillion-dollar coin in a dime form, it doesn't seem quite so bad. So, Greg, I'm reaching the point where I feel like I almost should step away from the computer when it comes to evaluating presidential speeches, because I can't really tell, like, what's a good Obama speech and what's a bad Obama speech these days?
It is hard to tell.
They all sound the same. I mean, this is the I joke, you know, last night was a rerun. The network screwed up and they played a tape of last year's. I mean, it's all the same stuff. It's always green jobs and, you know, energy jobs of the future. And the only slight change of last night is that Obama is the master of sounding like, let me repeat, everything I am saying is perfectly paid for and so reasonable that only partisanship could be anyone's reason for opposing me. Everything he says is so middle of the road and these opposition are just so unreasonable. It's really insufferable, and it's kind of amazing that more people aren't exasperated with it. I will note there really wasn't a ton of discussion about anything that much that was in the speech other than maybe the $9 an hour minimum wage proposal, kind of suggesting that I think most viewers have kind of tuned this out. I'm sure that, you know, the dial polls will say it's all happy talk and they like hearing what they're hearing. But by and large, this is more variation of the same speech he's been giving for 5 years. There's not a lot of new ideas. There's not a lot that's groundbreaking, new proposal or anything like that. The one thing I will note, it's really interesting that his rallying cry at the end is, these people deserve a vote. Greg, if you really think that the Dianne Feinstein assault weapons ban will save lives, don't they deserve passage of the legislation? I mean, isn't that setting the bar pretty low? Well, Jim, the NRA has so much power in Congress that Obama's just saying, isn't he being reasonable just by asking for a vote? Well, indeed, if you believe that passing the assault weapons ban will save lives, and there'll be kids who will be living if it passes and who will die if it does not pass, well, then anybody who votes against it must be terrible, which raises the question, so is President Obama willing to say that Joe Manchin is a terrible person? That Heidi Heitkamp out in North Dakota is a terrible person? That the six or seven red state Democrats up for re-election in 2014 who are going to be very tough votes for a Dianne Feinstein assault weapons ban, are they all terrible people who want to see dead children? Or is it only meant to be a partisan blunt object to beat the opposition with? Obama's rhetoric here reveals that this is less of a slam dunk of an issue than he really thinks it is, because, you know, completely buying into the nobility and the goodness of this legislation would mean having to demonize red state Democrats who know that this legislation is unpopular in their districts and in their states, who know that, you know, the public as a whole is pretty skeptical that any gun control law is going to actually change anything in terms of gun violence. And, you know, this is all a kabuki, you know, theater. This is all meant for show and not actually meant to pass anything. So, Greg, I hate watching the State of the Union. You know, I mean, everybody in politics has to act like it's a big deal. Chris Cillizza, who usually has a better head on his shoulders than this, said it was the Super Bowl of politics. I had said it was the Pro Bowl of politics. And it's it simulates actual politics and persuasion, but it's done at about half speed. Yes, there's a lot of big names involved in it, but no, you know, there's not really that much of consequence. And like, you know, 2 days afterwards, nobody remembers anything. And that's what this is. And, you know, in a week that's been full of really, you know, North Korean nukes and Pope's resigning and the Dorner thing out in California, we all have to pretend that Obama giving a speech is a really big deal. And as listeners can tell, Greg, I just can't pretend it anymore. Listeners, it was just another speech. That's all you need to know.
We waited, of course, a few minutes for the chamber to clear out, and then we got the Republican response. Marco Rubio, the Florida senator, delivering the response. A lot of great content here. Here's kind of how he encapsulated the difference between the way Obama views government and the way government really works.
His solution to virtually every problem we face is for Washington to tax more, borrow more, and spend more. This idea that our problems were caused by a government that was too small, it's just not true. In fact, the major cause of our recent downturn was a housing crisis created by reckless government policies. And the idea that more taxes and more government spending is the best way to help hardworking middle-class taxpayers, that's an old idea that's failed every time it's been tried. More government isn't going to help you get ahead. It's going to hold you back. More government isn't going to create more opportunities. It's going to limit them. And more government isn't going to inspire new ideas, new businesses, and new private sector jobs. It's going to create uncertainty.
And Jim, he also weaved in his own personal family history, talking about how he does not come from money. His parents were immigrants. His father relied, his mother still does rely on Medicare. And so he's not trying to be some sort of anarchist here. He's just talking about how limited government and unleashing the power of the free enterprise system is what really grows the American economy and allows us all to prosper. I thought content-wise, this was a great response, and I hope a lot of people took the time to go through it.
Maybe the best way to properly praise Marco Rubio is to get the critiques out of the way. Yes, he had an awkward moment where he had to reach over and get a bottle of water and get a drink. And that happened, you know, like, look, senatorial dehydration is a serious problem in this country, and I'll be taping a PSA about that later. Yes, he looks like he still gets carded. Yes, he, you know, is a Dolphins fan. But he's a little fresh on the national scene. I'm not afraid to brag that I was writing about Marco Rubio long before a lot of other folks were. He came to the National Review offices in like the summer of 2009. This is well before most people know he was, you know, at that point, the State House Speaker down in Florida was thinking about running for Senate, was trying to, you know, build his reputation amongst the national press. Folks at NR offices, the Speaker of the House, who's this really young kid, wants to come meet National Review editors and talk to us. They're hearing good things about him. Come meet him. And you get this type of, you know, oh, you got to meet this guy talk with disturbing regularity in conservative journalism circles. But I go into it, and Rubio, you know, with no staffer in tow, just him, comes in and really wows us. And, you know, what we saw last night was, I think, a pretty good close example to that, which is that he is not a man full of really – he's not a wonk like Paul Ryan. He's not necessarily full of soaring rhetoric and you know, flowery rhetoric or anything like that. But what he does is that, you know, for almost every issue we threw at him that day, and almost every issue that comes up, he can put it in very personal terms, very kitchen table terms that people – everybody can understand and appreciate. I think people just relate to him. What Van Jones said last night – in a begrudging bit of praise, was saying, look, you know, Marco Rubio just connects with people very well. He comes across as guileless, as not trying to spin you, not trying to sell you something or you know, hide what his true agenda is. And then he just kind of comes across as speaking, he's the most natural guy when making the Republican message. And so obviously I think the praise is well earned. And I think his reaction to the what people are calling is a gaffe. And look, the only issue was that the water bottle was not within reach. And so as a result of that, he had to reach off camera, and the camera tried to pan with him, and it looked a little bit awkward. Well, you know, like, you know, 10 minutes afterwards, he's tweeting a picture of the water bottle. And this morning he's saying, yeah, you know, this is God's way of reminding us that we're human. And, you know, he's kind of laughing at himself. And I have heard, but have not yet confirmed, say that he's actually got some sort of message out there, an email or something to people saying, look, I don't always respond to the president's State of the Union address, but when I do, I drink water. Stay thirsty, my friends, in emulating the Dos Equis, you know, campaign. So he could laugh at himself. And that just is one more very positive trait, one we need to see more of in politics. I don't think we see a great deal from the president and most other, you know, the high-level folks. And I think, you know, the sky's the limit for this kid. That he, you know, and when I say this kid, I think Rubio is like 1 year older than I am. He might be 40. So he's really a strikingly young figure who looks even younger in this on camera. He's earning rave reviews and he deserves it. And he may be, you know, turning into one of the, if not the face of the opposition, certainly one of the most preeminent Republicans in Congress who will be, you know, leading the opposition to Obama in the second term.
The crazy martini is obviously in relation to that. It's not that Marco Rubio got thirsty during a live television address with really hot TV lights in his face. It's the fact that in this honey boo boo Kim Kardashian world that we live in now, that's what people take away from it with the soundbite is that, oh my gosh, the guy rubbed a bead of sweat from his temple, or you could hear his cotton mouth, or he took a drink. And meanwhile, the country's $17 trillion in debt. I mean, this is how we get distracted from real solutions to real problems. And so not surprised that the media did that, but it doesn't advance us as a country, certainly.
It doesn't. But two observations, though. The first is that, you know, if the Rubio water thing is stepping all over his message, I certainly am hearing more, you know, drinking water jokes than I am about Obama's agenda from last night.
Mm.
Remember when Bill Clinton had to come out and insist that the president was still relevant?
Right.
Certainly, the Obama, you know, Obama was there, but it's not like we're, you know, oh my goodness, remember when Obama said such and such? It just happened, you know, kind of like a thunderstorm. You know, it's like this natural phenomenon. Whereas because the Rubio water thing was spontaneous, this is the only thing everybody can talk about. Because, oh my goodness, something happened we weren't supposed to see. You know, things went off script for a second. And that was, you know, that was genuinely meaningful and dramatic and exciting to us in a way that no speech is.
You mentioned the lack of much reaction to the president's speech. CNN, apparently, as soon as it was done, went out to the shootout in California.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they were clearly not mesmerized by it. You may be right about that. Maybe it'll actually boost Rubio and the GOP message in a way that we didn't initially anticipate. But, Jim, have a great day.
Good to see you, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Thursday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.